Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So lately, I've been thinking about how hard it is to make money in publishing and wondering why in the heck did we open a press? Like, why didn't we invest in real estate? Because we can invest in real estate in Japan or invest in real estate in the United States. So what are we doing? How you living? That's what I want to know. Like, it's all your fault. Like, I didn't go into this with you.
I feel like we were invested in commercial real estate in the U.S. for a while.
Yeah, we were. Thank goodness we're not anymore. That would have been horrid.
And we had a rental property for, like, a minute.
Yeah.
Residential.
Yeah.
And I did not like being a landlord. Like, there were several months that we didn't even cash the rent check.
Yes, because we kept forgetting. Not because we're flossy and rich, but because we're both really bad with checks.
Yes.
Like, we need everything direct deposited. And it got so bad that the renters called us up and they were like, you're messing with our finances. And we were like, okay. And I was like, they should just direct deposit. But you didn't trust them to direct deposit. Because in Japan, bank accounts are really secure. Yeah. I give my banking, like, every single client I've ever worked with has my banking information. Every single one of them. And because you can't take any money out.
Right.
And the one time we did have somebody take money out of an account, they were shut down that day and they went to jail.
And they took money out via debit card.
Yeah.
Not via having our banking information.
They did it via having the debit card information. Right. They didn't have the actual debit card. And we called the bank that day as soon as we saw the charge. And the bank, like, it's not like in the U.S. In the U.S., if you have something like that happen, it's really hard to get the money back. In Japan, as soon as they give the money back, because everywhere that you can use a debit card, there's a camera. And so they can see the people who use it. There's no on-the-sly way to use a debit card.
Well, they were using it online. But I had to go file a police report. It was a whole thing, but yeah, we got the money back.
I think it was way harder in the U.S. because we got the money back as soon as you turned in the police report. And for you, it was a whole thing because you had to go to two different offices.
In the U.S., we were on a trip and we had somebody charge $7,000 in plumbing against us for a plumbing job in Florida.
Yeah, we did.
And we got that money back in like a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I'm just feeling like Japan's better than America right now.
But on this, it is. Because in the U.S., if I write you a check, then you have all the information necessary to write a fake check drawing on my account.
Yes. And Japan doesn't do checks.
Japan doesn't do checks. Japan, if you give out your banking information, the only thing that can be done with it is people can send you money.
Yes. So please let me know if you'd like our banking information.
Okay.
Or you could just join our Patreon.
Thank you.
You just become a patron and give us money. Or you can buy us coffee.
But it's cheaper if you just send us money directly. So if you're just feeling generous, you're like...
We've had people buy us coffees and I've always really appreciated it.
Yeah, we have.
But coffee has changed so much since we first joined it. Like, people are doing posts and stuff like Patreon. And I don't have time for that.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's open. It's so anyone can see it, and then people buy them coffee after they read it. Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know, but I don't drink coffee. I appreciate the money, but I don't drink coffee.
So that's not the whole thing, babe. Like, no one's gonna make you drink coffee with the money.
Are you sure?
I know, because people have given us money on coffee before, and nobody asked us what we did with it.
Okay.
So right now, what we'd be doing with it is reinvesting it in the press.
Yes.
See, I did the segue come around.
You did the segue.
Yeah, I did the come back around from the digression. So why aren't we investing in real estate?
Because it's not a good investment.
So to be clear about where the money comes from, the money came from my business, my therapy practice. I'm what I think of as a super saver, and I'm super cheap. And we don't eat out.
No.
Like, we never eat out. We don't own a car. And so there's a lot of things that we just don't have to pay for. And we're really privileged. I'm super privileged that my business is literally a 10-minute bike ride away. The shortest I've ever gotten it down to is like 7 minutes, I think.
Yeah, you call me up. You're like, I made it in 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's, hey, those 3 minutes, that's brolin' up.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to shave three minutes off a bike ride, especially because it's about the two lights.
Yeah, it's about the traffic lights.
Yeah.
And it's so, not about the distance, it's about all the traffic lights.
Yes. So if you make one light, you have to race to the other light.
Yeah.
To make sure that you make it. And so I always felt like, what? And especially if I was like half a block away from the first light and I brolled up to get that light and kept on brolling to catch the second, I feel just like, oh man. Because sometimes I just want to get home.
There's a reason when I met you, everybody said, her name is Speed Demon.
Yeah, no one said that. No one said that.
Really?
Seriously, no one said it. And don't look at me like I was doing speed when you met me, because I wasn't.
No, I wasn't saying that.
Okay.
I was just like...
I was not doing drugs when we met. I was drug-free, except for smoking.
Some people thought you were Racer X. Some people thought you were Speed Racer.
Nobody thought that. No, I didn't. I had like a junky van when we met. I was afraid to go the speed limit. It was so junky. Because if I would drive it at the speed limit for too long, it would overheat.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, you know that. I need to pull over for a minute so my van doesn't overheat. And you're like, what are you saying? I'm saying I need to pull over so my van doesn't overheat. I've been driving it too long.
But I only had a 2-seat car. And there were 3 of us, so your van was it.
Yes. And everybody liked to ride in my van. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It was a total hoopty. So you bought me my first non-hoopty.
I did.
Yeah. So that was super, super nice. So the money comes from us living a really trimmed down lifestyle and being really privileged and really fortunate that we're able to have a 2-income household. And being really privileged and really fortunate that I was able to save the money from my practice and Chad was able to earn enough to pay all our bills.
Yeah.
So with the money from my practice, I just banked everything that once the overhead was paid, I just banked everything and did that for 5 years. Seven years.
That's
because
right.
We had been planning to... Either we were working towards a specific money amount. I'm not going to tell you what that amount is because none yet. That's how much, none yet. And in saving that amount, this is the amount of money that when we have it, we're just losing too much money because Japanese banks don't do interest. We're just losing too much money for it to sit here. And so when we hit this goal, we need to invest XYZ amount of it.
Yeah.
And... when we hit the goal, we have been kind of talking about various things that we were going to invest in. So in Japan, there's no parking anywhere. So we were thinking about buying a parking lot, and then they demolished the parking lot. There's a parking lot that was for sale for like the longest time across the street from our house. And then they demolished it and made it a rental car place. I was like, dang, I wanted to buy that lot.
Well, there was one that they demolished and made into a restaurant as well.
Yeah, and we wanted to buy that one first because that one was like literally right next door. Like we could look out our window.
Yeah.
We can see both from our window, different windows in the house.
And the thing about that one is the restaurant just had a sign out the other day saying celebrating our 10-year anniversary.
What?
That restaurant has been up for 10 years.
No, it hasn't.
It has.
No.
That was my emotional reaction. So I went back through our pictures because we took pictures while it was being built. And yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So 10 years ago, we didn't have enough money to buy a parking lot. And we were saving to buy a parking lot. And that one parking lot got turned into 2 restaurants, actually.
Right. And to be clear, this was not Paradise. Paradise was not being paved to put up a parking lot.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
I think it may have one point been Paradise. That got paved to put up a parking lot.
Maybe.
Doo-wop-wop. Wop.
It was a wood storage shed before that.
Yes. So they tore down the wood storage shed and they made it into a parking lot. And I thought for sure it was going to be like a pop-in parking lot. And it was. It was full because we're right next to like several major transportation hubs that have no parking anywhere near them.
Yes.
Which that just blows my mind that there's these major transportation hubs. Because in the United States, if you have a major transportation hub, there is some parking.
Yeah, you're so used to park and go in California.
No, not park and go. I'm thinking of like Fremont BART.
Yeah, Fremont BART has inadequate parking.
It's inadequate, but it has a parking lot.
Yeah, it does, because everybody would complain about it.
Well, by now, it might not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
16 years ago, Fremont BART had a parking lot, and there was also street parking, and there was extension parking that you could take a bus from, that you could park there and then bus to it.
Yeah,
you never wanted to do the extension parking.
No, I always thought, I don't know what the big deal is about the parking at Fremont. There's always a space when I go.
Yeah, because you had a Miata.
And I went at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So I tried going at like 11 a.m. once, and I was like, where's all the parking?
Yeah, there's none. And I told you, there's not going to be any parking.
Yeah.
And I told you, don't park at Nations. They tow. Nations does not play around. They will tow you because they have 6 spots in front of the Nations. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if the Nations over by Fremont BART is still there. But there's this one shopping center that had Nations and a really great deli. And so we would get, because they had the best, the absolute best Dutch Crunch buns.
Yeah.
And I told you, you have to try their Dutch Crunch buns. And you're like, what is a Dutch Crunch bun? And I'm like, it's awesome. That's what it is. You have to try it. Did you love them?
Yeah, I did.
So why didn't we buy, business-zoned property? That, like, because in Japan, there's a lot of restaurants and then apartments on top. Why didn't we purchase something mixed use? I was kind of thinking of doing that, right?
Yeah, so we're looking at mixed use, and it's something that we might still do in the future, because Japan's laws are weird, but there's basically no property appreciation in terms of increased value here in Japan. So if you buy something, that's probably what you're going to sell it for, if you buy something in a popular place.
Yeah.
But there are houses available in the countryside for like $500 for the house and the land.
Yeah.
But then you have to get a permit to tear down the house because it won't be inhabitable. You have to find out how much taxes are owed on the land. It ends up being like a real crapshoot as far as what you're getting.
So some of those deals are really good.
Yeah.
Because I have a friend that bought one for, I think it was $10,000. They bought a house and the land. And then they had to invest another $15,000 in it. And they got a really nice two-story house on a plot of land that, like, I'm American, so I deal in acres. And it was about an acre of land.
Yeah.
And it was out in the countryside where they choose to live anyways. That's where they want to live. And for me, I think that's a sweet deal to get an acre of land and a two-story house. For all told, like renovations and everything, $25,000?
If we wanted to live in the countryside, we could sell our apartment here, buy someplace in the countryside.
I don't want to live in the countryside. We don't drive.
Exactly. This is the big if. Like, if we did, we could have a very big place out in the country, but we've discovered we don't like a big place.
And this we don't place is in too the country. Big.
Right.
But I'm too lazy to move. And it's conveniently located near everything I want to be around.
And we have almost 900 square feet.
It's huge.
Yeah.
For Japan,
yeah.
Yeah. So in America, you're like, you live in a shoebox, if you're listening to this in America. In Europe, they're like, that's a good size.
Yeah.
So take that, Americans. I don't know what the Canadians think. I don't know why I'm being so aggressive to Americans right now. Americans have done nothing to me, and America is doing nothing to me. I think I'm kind of surly because, I'll be honest, I need another stimulus check. Because I'm out of work right now because I'm too sick to work. And that's like making me feel pinched.
Yeah.
I'm an earner and I like to earn. And the press right now, just real talk, it's not earning. It's not breaking even. And, you know, to be fully transparent, like if you're listening to this in 2022, we're recording it in, this is July of 2022. And
this is July of 2021. Don't put us a year ahead.
I did that, like, on Twitter. I was like, we opened the press in October 2022, and we're already doing all this, that, and the other. And someone was like, you're still awesome. You went into the future and did that. It's like, yes, I did. Thank you. 2021, and the press has opened in October, but we did not publish a book until February.
Right.
And then we published another book in
May.
And now we're publishing another book in August.
August, September, October, December. Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason that we're publishing at the rate we're publishing at is for me to learn and for the team to learn. Because we also did, like, the stroke of genius. Everyone who works for the press is green. Nobody has any experience in publishing. Like, nobody. And we have to have employees because we can't do it all. It's too much. And Chad doesn't do anything for the press. And he's always trying to. So, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. You do a lot of stuff for the press.
Thank you.
You do a lot of scheduling and ordering of things. And, like, but it's really random because I get overloaded and the team gets overloaded. And we're like, we just need, like, 10 or 15 things. Like, everybody has, because everybody's like, I just have one thing. I just have one or two things. And then I just have three things. And it adds up really quickly. And we usually give you about 15 to 20 things a week to do, I think.
And I have 7 years of experience in publishing. What I don't have is experience in publishing fiction.
Yeah. So you have science, and it's not even just like nonfiction. It's scientific publishing.
Yes.
Which is not like a memoir.
No, it's like textbooks and papers and monographs and all kinds of things.
But that's not why we opened the press.
No, we opened the press because...
Tell the truth of how it happened.
Okay, we opened the press because I wanted to publish my book.
Yes. So this is how I found out we were opening a press. Do you want to tell the people?
No, confess. No, go ahead.
No, confess.
I can't tell your perspective.
Oh my gosh, tell your perspective of what happened.
This is how Christopher found out we were opening a press. I said, Christopher, we're going to be rich. She said, what? And I said, yeah, we're opening a press. And she said, oh my God, all my dreams are coming true.
No, I wanted to do real estate. I had a whole plan for real estate.
This is why I told you should tell the story.
So how I found out is, y'all know we're puzzlers. And we do jigsaw puzzles. And I'm sitting at the kitchen table doing a jigsaw puzzle. And I get up and I walk over and I can see Chad's computer. And on the computer is this gorgeous moth, which I love. And Chad, as I'm walking over, I can see it. And Chad's like, hey, take a look at this. I look at him like, what is that? And he said, it's a cinnabar moth. What do you think? And I said, I love it. He said, great. I'm going to name it Cinnabar Moth. And I said, what are you naming? The press. I'm going to name it Cinnabar Moth Press. And I was like, what press? The press to publish my book. I was like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And then it was just like, we're just going to open the press and we're just going to put out a couple books. Because
you were on board with me self-publishing.
Yeah, I was.
But you didn't know it was going to mean turning it into a whole business endeavor.
No, I did not. I did not. So I found out in September of 2021. That we were opening a press, and I'm still doing my PhD and working full time at my practice, and you have a job.
Yeah.
So I was like, how are we going to do this? Because Rasta also works for my practice. And So our son works for my practice. And I was just like, how are we going to do this? We're all super, super busy. And you looked at me and you said, you'll make it work. I was like, what? What? And you said, I have faith in you. And I was like, you have too much faith in me. You have too much faith in me. So that is how it came about. And we didn't do a business plan, which bad us. If you're going to do a business plan. This is the first business I've ever opened without a business plan. Because Chad does not believe in business plans. Tell the people why you don't believe in business plans.
It's unfair to say I don't believe in business plans.
You don't believe you should ever have to write one.
that's unfair too, because we have a business plan now.
That I devised, put together.
Yes.
And proposed to you, and then you gave me several revisions.
Yes.
Until I wrote the business plan that of your dreams.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm not angry about it, if I sound aggressive. I'm not angry. I was like, don't get it twisted. You did not write the business plan.
I think that you can write a business plan too early in saying, like, I don't know enough about this industry, but I'm going to make guesses. And then those guesses get locked in as though they were founded in something more than being a guess. And I find that it's hard to change a business plan once you've written it, because everybody gets invested in that business plan.
But you don't share it with everybody. Our employees, the rest of the team does not, like, they have a rough sketch. And every couple of months, I update them when I feel like something has cemented in my mind.
Yeah.
So they don't know. They don't care.
They don't know.
They're like, deposit my salary. What do I care beyond the money that you're paying me?
Yeah.
Like, our legal team doesn't care.
No.
Editing team does not care about our business plan. Does it pay their bills?
Yeah.
Narration team, they don't care. Does the check clear? Same with all our authors. Does the check clear? That's all anybody cares about. And I find it so interesting that we have such a different view on that. Like, we should bring them all in and let everybody know. And, like, I'm super transparent with the authors. I'll tell them anything they want to know about their book.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't tell them anything about anyone else's book, because that's not their business.
Well, I think that you said it already, so it's not going to be any shock. We're losing money on the press.
Yeah.
At the moment. We think that this is going to happen for several more years.
Several. He didn't say seven. He said several.
Several. After which we hope to make money on it.
Yeah.
And I think with the real estate, when we looked at that as one way to invest in Japan, it's extremely low margin and is somewhat high risk. And the way that people try to mitigate that risk is by being super, like, cruel to their tenants if they're doing residential.
Mm.
And I'm not up for that. I'm not up for, like, monthly inspections and charging people if you find a pinhole in the wallpaper. And I'm like, it's an apartment. It's going to have wear and tear on it.
But my landlords don't mess with me and don't inspect me and don't do any of that for my business.
Because your apartment was in perfect condition when you took it.
No, it's in horrible condition.
Right. And so I think that's what it was, is like, do we rent out horrible condition places and not care? Do we rent out great condition places but have to always be worried? And then you can hand over the management to a management company, and that cuts
into it. Ross, I was going to make Ross to go to school.
Yeah.
And get, because in Japan, you can't just manage property.
Right.
You have to have a management company, or you have to have a professional manager to manage the property.
Right.
And in the United States, I could just go buy property and manage it, and no one would say anything. But in Japan, you have to have a real estate accountant. You have to have a real estate lawyer, and you have to have a real estate manager. You have to have all three of those. And if you're going to rent to foreigners, you have to have a professional real estate guarantor company to back them. Because they did away with having people have to have individual personal guarantors, and now they've moved to professional guarantors. And what that is it's a company that guarantees that the person renting the apartment will pay their rent and will fulfill their lease.
It's an insurance company, basically. Yeah. Because if the tenant doesn't, then the company will pay it for, I think, 3 months.
Yeah.
And start eviction proceedings and that whole thing. And we just didn't want to be.
You.
I don't want to be part of that.
So for me, the turning point on real estate, and this is what opened the door for the press, is that I did not want to buy houses in the United States, because the real estate market is so volatile, and we had to really pick the timing of when to leave the United States based on the real estate market, so that we wouldn't lose a bunch of money when we sold our house.
Right.
And I was like studying it and looking at the forecasts and the trends and all of that. And then shortly after, I feel bad for the people who bought our house in the United States, because shortly afterwards there was a huge crash.
But if they held it for at least 5 years, then they're making good money on it. So,
yeah. So, because it's appreciating.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with American real estate. If you can ride out the crashes and if you can keep rental properties full, then it appreciates every year. It becomes more valuable depending on the neighborhood that you're in. And the neighborhood that our house was in, every year it would become more valuable. There would be a crash, and then we would just ride the next bubble.
Yeah.
Because that's the cycle that American real estate gets so bloated that it pops, and then it refills.
Yeah.
It pops and refills. And I felt like not being there in the United States, that I couldn't suss it out for myself. Because I would do so much research, but a lot of it was also talking to friends and neighbors and people on the ground and paying attention to what was being sold. Because I would, when we were getting ready to leave, I was driving the neighborhood to see if anything else for sale in our neighborhood.
Yeah, is anybody planning to move?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to be competing against other houses in exactly this neighborhood? And if so, is ours at the level that we want it to be relative?
Oh, our house was cherry.
Yes.
Very our house, so. The realtor was just like, oh my God. This house is amazing, except for one thing. All of the rooms were painted different colors.
Well, and the foundation was cracked, but we fixed that.
Yeah. That foundation is cracked again. That foundation will perpetually crack because it's built on sand.
Yes.
And I wish I understood that, because I don't know if we would have bought that house. Though I was really happy in that house. The reason we didn't rent that house is because we used the money from selling that house to move to Japan.
Yes.
So that's how we came to Japan. We sold our house and I sold my business and we came to Japan on that money. So not being in the United States, I didn't feel like I could rent. I mean, I didn't feel like I could buy. Why didn't you want to buy in the United States?
I think I didn't want to buy in the United States because the commercial real estate, I had been involved in that, and that was like decent money, but there's always the push to move into new stuff because of the tax rules. So there's like a whole boring thing. If you're not in the property, there's something called a 1031 exchange where every year your building depreciates in value nominally. And then if you sell it, you have to pay taxes as if you paid zero for the building. But if you immediately buy a bigger building, then you can roll the tax basis over under what's called a 1031 exchange. So the whole business is set up on buying ever more real estate.
Yeah.
Not on buying something and getting steady income from it.
Yes. So once you get into American real estate, it's really hard to get out.
Yes.
And it's designed that way to lock people in. And I feel like American real estate is designed for foreclosure,
yeah,
to push people into foreclosure and to have people, because we had like on the regular people offering us loans and irresponsible loans and irresponsible mortgages. That was just like a lot of money up front, but also just wild, wild, you know, rates and just not good stuff. So that kind of put me off. And then in Japan, what put me off is that I had this vision of buying a cute little unit like the one that was that I used for my office and then fixing it up. So buying cheap, fixing it up, upgrading it and charging more rent and raising the rent and getting a nice exchange. And I was researching that and everything and really big on the idea. And then I helped a client move into a brand new apartment, and what they did to that apartment hurt my heart. Like, I felt so bad for the landlords. For the owners of the unit, I felt so bad because it was pristine when they moved in. Brands, everything was new, and they ruined it. Just ruined it. And then another client did the same thing that I was helping move out. They just ruined a brand new apartment. And I know the culture in Japan is that you just assume every tenant is going to ruin your building.
Right.
Ruin your unit. Because I was talking to my Japanese friends and they're like, yeah, everybody ruins it. And I was like, what? Like, you just expect that you have to steam the apartment when someone moves out to replace the wallpaper and replace all of the flooring and replace the cooking unit. And yeah. I was just like, what are you saying to me right now? That's wild. And I don't have the heart for that. I would take it really personally. And, like, that's why we ask for so much. That's why we have key money and deposit and all of that, is so that we can have the money to, we're supposed to. And then in Japan, you have to keep a certain amount of money for repairs stashed away for every piece of property that you own. So it's actually quite expensive to do real estate in Japan.
Well, and that's typically a rule for commercial real estate in the U.S. When I had commercial real estate, we had to have a repair reserve of a certain percentage of the value of the building, yeah, just available for repairs and things. And the fact that you don't have to have that for residential property, I think
leads to slumlords.
Yeah, it does.
Because you could just get so underwater on the property that you can't afford to make repairs. I think some slumlords are slumlords because they want to be, mm-hmm, but I think others just get underwater and they can't afford to make the repairs necessary for it to be habitable.
Yeah, and so I feel like with publishing, that when we looked at it, the economics of it short term are pretty bad.
Yes.
Like, most people who self-publish don't make very much money. And because we spend
7 books.
And because we spend a substantial amount of money on covers and audiobooks and editing and all of that kind of stuff.
The audiobooks are rocking the house.
Yeah.
They rock the bells. Man, oh man, they're expensive.
Yeah, which we could do them on the cheap by putting it up on the Audible Exchange. No,
that is your fantasy.
No, and saying a 50-50 with the narrator and no money up front.
That is your fantasy. You keep saying, went and I looked on Audible. I'm the one who looks the stuff up.
Okay.
You told me that. And so I was like, maybe we should do that. No, people are saying that. So when you go and you click and you look on Fiverr and you look on Upwork and you look on ACX, everybody is lowballing. But then when you want to talk contract, everybody's rates all of a sudden want to jump and double.
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like it's a bait and switch.
Oh, it's total. And
so you're talking like you could really do it, and you can't.
I don't think you can do it, and I definitely don't think you can do it ethically, because either you believe that you're going to make the money, or you're offering somebody half of nothing to do all that narration work. And I didn't feel right about doing that.
Well, and I'm looking at what most publishers are doing. If you're going to self-publish, I highly advise everybody, just do ebooks, man. Ebooks are just so inexpensive to do.
Yeah.
Like, but we can't because we're a publisher. Right. And so we have to offer something more. From my perspective as a publishing house, we have to offer something more, something that's a little bit out of reach for the self-published. And one of the things that we do that self-publishers can do some and not others is we put books forward for awards that only publishers can do.
Yeah.
We do audiobooks, which, huge investment, and we do high-end custom-made book covers.
And as of our third book, which is it's third because that's when they'll start doing it, we're going to have our books deposited in the Library of Congress, and like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of perks to being published with a publisher.
But I feel like the way that we're doing it is completely ethical, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, we're not charging the authors for anything. We're not telling them that they should use their advance to promote their book. We have a promotion plan that we do.
Yeah.
And we, building our social media platform. I'm just doing Twitter. I'm not trying to... I just don't feel like we have enough books to do Instagram. I think I think maybe next year I might do Instagram, but it's going to be lazy Instagram. Like, I'm not going to put any effort into it. Uh-huh. I'm just going to have it on the website and link it to, and I'm just going to
post covers.
Yes, that's it. post covers and book trailers. Yeah. That's it. 2 posts a month. What?
Okay.
Be happy you get that. Because I do see the allure of Instagram. And I think it might be nice maybe to do like, because every book has reviews, maybe do like a review snippet. So I could see maybe doing once a week on Instagram next year. But starting the press and launching it, man, oh man, I'm working 7 days a week, 16-hour days.
Yeah, so here's the business plan and the secret sauce in case you want to start a press and take over. We pay attention to the authors. We try and do our best to get a good cover. We make an audiobook. We spend some money advertising. We make things. We spend a lot of money on the books, and then we hope people buy them. There you go. There's the secrets.
And I would say if you don't have an angel investor, save up. Plan to like start saving your coins now.
Yeah.
And plan to take like, you know, a 5 to 7 year run. Because you're probably not going to be breaking even for the first 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and we're trying to build a brand with Center by Moth. That's why we got a great logo. We put that
You have
on
the
everything.
Best logo and a website and all of that. So something I'm really excited about, and this is an exclusive for Just Music Notes. I haven't tweeted it out. I haven't said it to anyone else. But I love you and we're family. We're all beautiful music notes together, is that I'm starting a solo podcast. Well, it's not really it's kind of a solo podcast called The Writer's Triangle for Cinnabar Moth. And it's not going to be like the Take Twos where it's intimate and it's mine and Chad's take on publishing. It's going to be just me hot on the mic. So if y'all love my laugh and can stand my voice and all of that and think I'm interesting and fun, it's a different flavor. It's a more serious, and there's still digression and absent-mindedness because that's who I am. That's who I be.
Yeah.
But talking about the ins and outs of publishing, and then so it's going to air twice a week, and it's going to be on the Cinnabar Moth website. And the first Monday in Japan time of every month, which works out to be Sunday.
That's right.
In most of the rest of the world. We're doing it at 1. We're scheduling it to drop at 1 a.m. Japan time Monday to try and hit the sweet spot for everyone. And the first one is going to be, the two are going to drop simultaneously. And we're going to have episode 0. And I think that episode 0 is just me talking about the setup of the podcast. I love an episode 0. And then the second episode that's dropping simultaneously on the first Monday in August is an interview with the author whose book is coming out in August. And it's going to... No, not the first. Sorry, the second. No, it's the first. The first Monday. First, because we're doing it the first and third
mm-hmm.
Monday of every month. And... So you're going to get episode 0, which is me talking just about the setup of Cinnabar Moth and why I'm doing the Writer's Triangle. And the second one is going to be an interview, and I think it's really cool because it's going to be Rasta, our son, who y'all know is just my family.
Yeah.
And so you'll get to hear him and see what he's about. He's going to be interviewing the authors. And so... The first Monday is going to be an author interview, and the third Monday is going to be me talking about the business of publishing. And we also started a Cinnabar Moth YouTube channel, which I think is really cute. And we have stuff come out every week, and it's already launched. It's Cinnabar Moth Pub on YouTube. And we have sneak peeks of the books. We have Meet the Characters. We'll have little snippets of... Meet the Authors, we already have sneak peeks, we already have Meet the Characters, and we have everything that...
We have some book playlists and...
Yeah, everything that you need if you're a book club.
Yeah.
So tell them what's in the book playlists.
No, I think everybody's done a playlist of songs that they think goes with the book.
Yeah.
And then some people have also done foods.
Yes, I did your foods, so that's why you don't know that you did food.
And some people have done drinks.
I did your drinks, and that's why you don't know everybody does drinks.
Yeah,
Because you're like, not a cooperative author.
I'm not. Food and drinks, pizza and Coke. Like, what? That's done.
No. Just no. Go check out the Not My Ruckus playlist.
But I did the songs.
Yeah, you did the songs. I did the, and we did the lineups together.
Yeah.
And other than that, I couldn't get Chad to do anything. Because he was like, I don't know how to find a food video on YouTube.
Thank you. I'm a writer. What?
Oh my gosh.
I don't even watch YouTube for entertainment. I don't understand people who do.
Oh my gosh. You do too watch YouTube.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
When you show me.
Oh my gosh. He's being a liar right now, I feel.
I don't ever watch YouTube.
Like, you not only ever. Watch it with me.
I only watch it with you.
So therefore you watch YouTube.
Not on my own. Like, it's voluntarily, because if you want to spend time with me, I'm down for that. However you want to spend that time. But YouTube is one of my least favorite websites.
Wow.
Yeah.
As a YouTuber, that hurts my heart. I'm a BookTuber now.
Well, your videos don't ever have, like, random strobe.
That's true. And I make sure the videos I watch don't have flashing.
Right.
And if they do, I turn my computer so that you don't have a seizure.
Yeah.
So it also is going to, the channel also has book trailers. And in November, because we don't, because we're not, we don't have a book coming out this November, there's going to be me talking about the business of publishing. And then I think next year in this year in December, because I don't believe we should publish books in January. I have this tick in my brain that people don't buy books in January. I know that's not true, but I just can't shake it. So we're not publishing books in January.
Well, and I feel like here's the thing, is that we are not actually in competition with other small presses.
No, we're not. We're good friends. Yeah. Like, one of my best Twitter buds is Outcast Press, because which I absolutely adore.
If you have heard of us as a press, we are winning.
Yeah.
We are in competition against the big four who dominate most of publishing just to get
noticed. I'm not in competition with them. But I'm doing my own unique thing. I'm not in competition with anybody. Yes, we're doing our own unique
thing. But if independent publishing gets stronger, then that's good for us.
Yes.
And so when we give away this information, it is with the intent that independent publishing gets stronger.
Self-publishing gets stronger.
I count self-publishing as independent publishing. I was just about to say, if you choose to self-publish using the information, rock on. We are happy that we provide that information to you.
Add us on Twitter and we'll retweet your stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that blows other presses' minds when I retweet their releases. I don't retweet their releases that come out on the same day as our releases, but and sometimes I do. Because I feel like there's enough Twitter to go around for everyone.
Right.
And I feel like if you like this book, you might like that book. And if you like that book, you might like this book.
Yes.
Avid readers are going to read.
Yes.
So readers read. There are enough eyes. And there's new eyes being born every day.
Thank you.
It's just not that serious.
Like, if you're looking for something like Nicholas Sparks' The Notebook, but published independently, you're not going to want to buy Not My Ruckus.
Mm-mm. Not at all. But they may want to get Relatively Normal Secrets.
Yeah.
Which is our September release. Or they might like, maybe not as much. So I think it's not as close. But I think if you like YA fantasy, then you absolutely love Drumfangill. And if you like adult fantasies and dark pixies, you absolutely love Pixies in the Mist. It's twisted.
Mm-hmm.
It's twisted and dark. And then we have our anthology in December. And I know I've been plugging the hell out of everything just right then and there. But y'all know me. I'm always plugging something at the end of the podcast. And at least I wait until the end of the podcast.
Yes.
I don't do it like the whole podcast long. I'm not defensive about it at all.
Not in the least bit.
Not even the tiniest. So I was like, here I am just rattling off all our books. But they should go visit centerbarmoth.com. I'm going to go whole hog.
They should. And follow us. Click on books. See what you like.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And if you're a music note and you promise to leave a review, add us on Twitter and be like, hey, I'm a music note. Can I get a book? And I'll be like, yes, but you only get one book at a time. And if you review that book, then I'll give you another book. because I'm like that. I'm generous like that. And if you do it on Amazon, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That is the juiciest ever. That is just like, you're giving me, I'm not going to sing because you don't deserve that punishment, but you're giving me the sweetest taboo on that. And that's why I'm in love with you, because, whew, okay. Amazon's a hustle.
No point. Shade on that.
No sade on that. So thank you so much for listening, and if you like what you're hearing, follow us on over to the Take Two, and we'll talk about when did the press feel legitimate and like a real business and something that we can see making money one day, because the struggle is real.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and resources, because you know your time and attention is a valuable resource, and we love that you tune in every week. We are so thrilled to be in the top 50% of podcasts. Thank you, Music Notes. We absolutely love you. And on Player FM, we're usually in the top 20 for podcasts about Japan, and we totally appreciate that. So we appreciate you, and we hope you listen to us next week when I think we're going to be talking about the Paralympics. Although I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. I don't know.
We won't hold you to anything.
Y'all know better than that. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.